X-29. Number 5B.
Mrs. Eddy continues. Belief in a material basis, from which may be deduced all rationality, is slowly yielding to the idea of a metaphysical basis, looking away from matter to mind as the cause of every effect. Science and Health, 268-6-9. This is the key to the whole chapter. Belief in a material basis is slowly yielding to the idea of a metaphysical basis. We at once gain the feeling that something is going on between idea and belief, and that what is going on is a gradual yielding on the part of belief. In other words, there is a translation in progress, which imparts the sense of the Christ. But the standpoint is that of Christianity, because it is the idea doing the work. The idea is dissolving a belief. You may wonder on what authority a belief yields. It gives way because an idea has dynamic power. An idea is a reflection of God, and therefore also reflects the Christ power, which has such strength that a belief cannot do anything but yield. All through this chapter you will sense a tremendous truth power forcing materiality to give itself up in order to make room for spiritual facts. In this chapter, the material world, material existence, yields to the realm of ideas, the science of being. Science of being is rather a long chapter, but we are helped in studying it by seeing that it has three parts. The first part runs to page 306, 31. The second part continues up to the platform, and the third part is the platform itself. The first part shows how an idea saves from ignorance. The second part deals with the application of the first part to the human. And the third part, the platform, shows why ignorance has to yield. First part. In the first part, we find a description of how a right idea, the idea of mind, of spirit, of soul, of principle, of life, of truth, and of love, has the Christ power to reduce its counterfeit belief to its native nothingness. It shows how an idea saves from the beliefs of ignorance, how an idea handles invisible error, as it were. This first part gives us the impress of a wonderful, clean, clear-cut theory of how a right idea works on its counterfeit belief and forces it to disappear. If I had the time to show you how systematically every one of the following seven subjects is built up in itself, you would be overwhelmed with the exactness of Mrs. Eddy's revelation. For the purpose of these talks, however, I shall have to restrict myself to giving you only the main tones of the subject. The first subject shows that in metaphysics, a material basis yields to the allness of mind as the one and only basis, mind. In metaphysics, matter as a basis of existence has to yield to an ideational basis. We learn here that metaphysics bases itself on the science of mind, on the allness of ideas, and that it rejects any pantheistic belief in a dual basis. No wonder, therefore, that in metaphysics, which is superior to physics, the objects of sense must yield to the ideas of soul. Hence, to have a metaphysical basis means to have a scientific basis. And this scientific basis is far from being something cold, dead, or purely intellectual. Metaphysics, as Mrs. Eddy indicates, is based on an indigenous living spirituality, on a cultivated spiritual understanding. And before such a basis of ideational living, material-mindedness yields to the allness of mind. The second subject depicts that the spiritual alone is substantial, and thus robs matter of its suppositional substance, spirit. Before the spiritual, which is substantial, the material loses every claim of substance. As shown here, the spiritual cannot produce its opposite, matter. And if only the spiritual is real, substance matter must be a supposition. Matter, having no divine source, has no real existence, and consequently must be considered as mutable and temporal. Furthermore, we see that immortal divine consciousness cannot perceive matter, that it is aware only of the infinite reflections of spiritual good. In the third subject, we find that the infinitude of the spiritual renders any belief in finiteness an impossibility. Soul. Whatever the infinite idea is, it can never be in a finite form. Well, we listen to these statements and nod in agreement, but very seldom do we draw any conclusions from them. For instance, as can be gathered from this subject, this statement means that infinite mind cannot be in finite brain, that the one spirit cannot be split up into many gods, that soul is not in body, that principle is not in a person, that life is not in mortal, temporal, finite life, that the consciousness of truth is not in matter and error, and that love can find no fulfillment in finite sense. Hence, any belief contradicting the idea of limitlessness must yield. The fourth subject tells us that the spiritual alone is founded in divine principle, and so proves the material, the human and personal, to have no divine principle. What is brought out very plainly here is that only that which is godlike is backed up by God and consequently has a divine principle. Whatever does not originate in God is without divine foundation and cannot therefore fall back on a divine principle. Thus, mortal mind has no principle. The mortal body has no principle. The temporal has no principle. In fact, error denotes the very absence of a principle. So before an idea which is always vested in its principle, a belief founded on a human theory, on a hypothesis, or on personal views, has no other choice but to yield and disappear. In the fifth subject, we see that spiritual, immortal life brings about the end of a material, mortal sense of life. The strong sense conveyed here is that spiritual life is, and that it is not subject to change. This spiritual life is gained through laying down a mortal sense of life. We have learned that a mortal is not the idea of life, and that material man is not immortal and cannot be made immortal. Neither can death lead to immortality. What has to die is the belief in mortality. Immortality can be gained only through a spiritual sense of life. Mrs. Eddy makes it very clear here that immortal being is attained as probation and progression bring the end of mortal error. To sum this whole subject up in a few words, we could say that spiritual life forces the material sense of life to yield. The sixth subject then explains that before an immortal consciousness, which constitutes immortal man, mortal consciousness, constituting mortal man, yields truth. These pages supply us with an excellent description of mortal manhood as nothing more than mortal and carnal mentality, illusive consciousness, which disappears before the consciousness of spiritual manhood. Man, as the idea of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, extinguishes mortal, illusive consciousness. The deflection, the inverted image of man, melts away before the true reflection. Here, Mrs. Eddy gives us a true delineation of what constitutes spiritual man. It is interesting to note that she refers to man as the conscious infinitude of existence. Pondering such statements makes one realize what an utterly different concept spiritual man is to that which is commonly called man. This brings us to the last subject, which is that the fact of man's coexistence with God dissolves the belief of man's separation from God, love. This subject strongly emphasizes that man always exists in God, that he is always inseparable from God, that without God he would be a non-entity. It shows man to be the manifestation of mind, the offspring of spirit, the object of soul, the operation of principle, the expression of life, the reflection of truth, and so forever included in love. We get here a very marked sense of man's inseparability from God, and that the belief in a separation from God must give place to this idea of inseparability. This closes the first part of the chapter. Reviewing its subjects briefly, we can see that each one deals with the question of a right idea dispelling its counterfeit belief. Through these various subjects, we find that the right idea of mind dispels the belief in any other basis, mind, that the right idea of spirit dispels the belief of substance matter, spirit, that the right idea of soul dispels any belief in limitation, soul, that the right idea of principle dispels the belief in any other authority, principle, that the right idea of life dispels the belief in material life and mortality, life, that the right idea of truth dispels the belief in illusive consciousness, truth, and that the right idea of love dispels the belief of man's separation from God, love. This whole first part is one big exposition of the theme that an idea and an illusion cannot coexist, that an idea excludes and extinguishes its counterfeit belief. Therefore, put in my own words, everything that is not mind-like has no proper basis. Everything that is not spirit-like has no real substance. Everything that is not soul-like has no divine identity. Everything that is not principle-like is not backed up by God. Everything that is not life-like has no immortal and eternal existence. Everything that is not truth-like is not part of the conscious infinitude of existence. And everything that is not love-like is not, is just not included in being. Second part. Having presented in the first part the general theory, as it were, that a right idea dispels its counterfeit belief, Mrs. Eddy now gives in the second part an illustration of how the right idea of God has dispelled illusions throughout the spiritual history of mankind. If a right idea always makes its counterfeit belief yield, then it must have done so throughout all time. So the second part relates how a right idea handles not only invisible error as it did in the first part, but also visible error, which Mrs. Eddy illustrates through the successive stages of the spiritual story in the Bible. This second part begins with the Adam dream and ends with the infallibility of scientific demonstration. It shows how the right idea of God, Christ, breaks upon the Adam dream or mortal consciousness and dispels it, step by step, to the point where it gives place entirely to a full understanding, which demonstrates metaphysics infallibly. This chain of scientific being can be considered from two angles. On the one hand, we can see the Christ at work throughout the spiritual history of mankind, from the Adam story right up to the discovery and understanding of Christian Science. On the other hand, we can see how the Christ awakens each one of us from the Adam dream and enlightens us step by step to the final recognition of divine metaphysics. As Mrs. Eddy says at the beginning of this second part, the voice of truth still calls. Let us see what spiritual steps lead us out of the Adam dream. The first subject presents us with the true and the false origin of man. We find here the fundamental proposition that the Adam man originates in the belief that there is intelligence in matter, whereas man's origin is in the divine mind. The Adam dream, we see, is the belief of intelligence in matter and is the origin of all human discord. It claims that there is more than one intelligence and so suggests God's many, resulting in evil beliefs. However, as Mrs. Eddy points out, this is only a transient sense of man's origin, and finally mortals must awaken to the fact that man's providence is in divine mind. The Christ then leads thought to the second step, which is beautifully illustrated through the second subject, where Mrs. Eddy shows that mortals must strive to overcome material error with the understanding of spirit. Having analyzed in the first subject the true origin of man and the false belief about man's origin, mortals are faced with the great decision whether they wish to acknowledge as origin the divine mind only or the belief of mind in matter. Like Jacob, mortals must struggle with material error until they realize its unreality. This struggle continues until mortals conquer material error with the strength and understanding of spirit. Then a mortal is changed. He becomes a new man and is entitled to a new name. He is no longer called a mortal, but man. The Christ impelled Jacob's struggle, and this changed Jacob into Israel. The third subject shows us that this new man is a spiritual identity, not a corporeal body, that man is not a mortal, but an immortal soul. At this stage, after the struggle, the great fact dawns upon thought that soul cannot be identified in body, that soul's expression, man, has form, substance, and color without material accompaniments. Man's identity is seen to be not material, but spiritual, good, unchangeable, imperishable, immortal, sinless. Hence, it can never be lost. It is forever intact. This, of course, is contrary to mortal belief, the very belief that has to be dispelled. Further, as shown in Bible history, the Christ forced upon mankind the realization that God is not a corporeal Jehovah, but a spiritual, universal principle. The fourth subject here also depicts that God must be to man an infinite, impersonal principle, and not a personal, unknown deity principle. Mortals like to believe in an unknown God, but God can be understood scientifically. This was really the outstanding feature of Jesus, that he understood God as principle and was able to demonstrate it scientifically. Mrs. Eddy says in this connection that Jesus of Nazareth was the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. Science and Health, 313, 23-24. At this step of unfoldment, it is revealed that man is only man insofar as he works scientifically and is girt with principle. Having seen that man is not material, corporeal, or personal, we can quite easily understand the fifth subject, namely, that man, as the true idea of life, is only spiritually perceptible life. With Jesus, there came a time when people had to learn that life is not corporeal, not organic, that life was not, for instance, in the body of Jesus. In this fifth subject, we have a very fine description of how the materialistic view of Jesus' opponents could not grasp the new idea of life. A materialist looks for life in the body, hence he cannot measure rightly Jesus' life or spiritual life. Can you see how important this step is? We are very apt to look at a material manifestation, say the body, for evidence of life. Life is always ideational and spiritual, and it must be understood as such. A further great spiritual revelation was that each one of us has a right to the Christ consciousness and can inherit the liberty of the sons of God. The sixth subject, too, depicts that the Christ man demonstrates the facts of being, truth. Jesus demonstrated beyond question that a true idea saves, that a true idea is the Christ to a situation, that a true idea demonstrates spiritual facts. What spiritual facts does a true idea demonstrate? According to this subject, it brings to light true creation. It proves the supremacy of the spiritual over the material. It resurrects from a false sense of things. It opens up the secrets of the divine principle. It proves the ever-availability of life. It heals disease and annihilates any sense of discord. This is really as far as the Bible takes us. And at this juncture, the discovery of Christian Science picks up the thread of spiritual history and revealed the promised Comforter, divine science. As you know, we are drawing close to the end of the 6,000-year period since Adam, and the 7,000-year period is dawning, the period depicted in the seventh subject. Since we stand on the threshold of this new era, this last subject is of great importance to us, as in its text we shall find contemporary spiritual history, and with it a guide telling us what steps have to be taken now and in the future to lead on the centuries and to reach the climax of the science of being. My epitome for this last subject is that divine science will be universally understood and infallibly demonstrated. Love. It is here we encounter the proposition that the science of the scriptures must be understood through inspiration. What has been brought into focus today is the search for the science of the Bible. Mrs. Eddy gave us the key to the scriptures, but it was John W. Dorley who, with this key, interpreted to our age the science of the Bible. For the first time in human history, the Bible was revealed as one coherent story built on the fundamentals of Christian science. Mrs. Eddy then points out that this science of the Bible must be understood spiritually. As many of us are beginning to feel, the great demand on us at this moment is to get the spirit and not just the letter of this inspired interpretation of the Bible, as we have it in John Dorley's verbatim reports. We may have read these reports, but what we have to do is to ponder them again and again. We have to imbibe their spirit. If we do this, something will happen. Namely, exactly as the text further tells us, we shall realize ourselves becoming more and more dissatisfied with all that is wrong, and find ourselves driven more and more towards spiritual joys and satisfaction. Then, as we progress and begin to love the spiritual above all else, we shall be only too willing to let it operate naturally in our lives. Thus, Mrs. Eddy shows, we shall gain, step by step, the spiritual idea of life, and so be ushered into undying realities. This spiritual unfoldment will change our human character into a Christian character, one knowing, loving, and desiring only good. And this change, we see, will inexorably enforce itself universally on everybody. Then the time will come when true Christianity will be universally accepted. This is rather briefly what this last subject tells us. But I hope that, with what I have indicated to you, you will be able to trace in it the immediate and future spiritual steps necessary in order to reach the ultimate goal of the science of being. The purpose of this whole second part is to portray how the Christ idea, the right idea of man and the universe, has worked throughout human history to dispel the darkness of the Adam dream, and thereby to bring to light, step by step, the final and universal understanding of divine metaphysics. This story applies equally to each one of us. What we have to see very clearly, however, is that this development has always been and is now taking place because of the Christ impulsion, which is forever going on in spite of the ignorance of mankind. The Christ is always urging upon mankind a higher and ever higher idea. Let us keep this fact in mind and so be always willing to accept a new idea, an idea of which we have hitherto been unaware. As we have seen, the first great idea that broke upon mankind was the true origin of man, the fact that man originates in God, mind, and not in so-called intelligent matter, mind. This realization brought a second big step, the struggle to overcome with spiritual strength the material sense of man's origin and existence, spirit. This again prepared the ground for the birth of a third big period of spiritual unfoldment. The new idea of man not as corporeal, sinful, and mortal, but as having a completely spiritual identity, sinless, incorporeal, unchangeable, and imperishable soul. Then came a fourth period in which mankind had to acknowledge God not as a corporeal person, an anthropomorphic being, but as a divine, incorporeal, universal, impersonal, and scientific principle. After that, a further great idea dawned on human thought, the fact that life is spiritual and is only spiritually perceptible. Jesus proved life to be spiritual and not in matter, life,